All right, so good to see everybody this evening. We're going to keep talking about leadership. And as I mentioned to you last week, leadership is simply influence. So whether you are a stay-at-home mom, I know at least one here is that, or CEO of a major company, you're a leader. In either one of those contexts, you are a leader. Now, the number of people that you are leading may be quite a bit different. Perhaps the amount of influence you might have may be greater in certain contexts. But leadership is simply influence. And no matter what the context is, it's important to do it well. And what I mentioned last week is what we find in Jesus is a great example of leadership. Think about the type of influence that he has. I mean, think about this for a moment. We're here today, 2,000 years later, because of him, because of his influence, because of his leadership, because of his sacrifice and resurrection. And so, incredible amount of leadership. I mean, historians just mention over and over again that there has been no figure that has had the kind of influence that Jesus has had. And so, who better to look at when we're talking about leadership for a good example, for a model of leadership, than Jesus Christ himself? Leading like Jesus, and started to think about this last week, and we'll get into it a little bit more this week. Leading like Jesus, it starts with the heart. Mark 10 is one of the passages that we looked at last week. I'd like for us to look at it again. Mark 10, 42 through 45. When the 10 heard about this, James and John's request, that is, to sit at Jesus' side, ruling over the people, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and he said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you." I mentioned last week, I think those four words there are so crucial to Jesus' teaching here. So he's talking to these disciples, these guys who have sacrificed so much to follow Jesus, to learn from him, to spend time with him, to sort of absorb his teaching and what he's trying to do, his mission, we might say. So he says, you've got these Gentile rulers, they lord it over people. And then he says, looking at these disciples, not so with you. Okay, how's it go? Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. So greatness comes through service, comes through being a slave to all. Verse 45. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So he says, the pathway to greatness, and I think we could add to that, the pathway to true godly leadership is being a servant. It's to be a slave of all. And then he ramps it up a little bit more and he says, okay, look at me. I'm your leader. I have influence over you. Here's the deal with the Son of Man. Did not come to be served, but to serve, ultimately giving his life as a ransom for many, for sinners, for broken people. So, thinking about that passage there and Jesus' teaching there on leadership, on influence, I'd like us to think about this question, and this will be kind of the guiding question for our lesson this evening. Am I a servant leader, or am I a self-serving leader? That's the big question. Again, leadership being defined as influence. Am I a self-serving leader, or am I a servant leader? One way to, I think, accurately assess our response to that question is by checking our ego. And here's what I mean by checking our ego. Do we, I don't do this a lot, but this one's kind of cool. And I got this from Ken Blanchard on the book Lead Like Jesus. He said, do we edge God out in our lives, particularly when it comes to leadership, or do we exalt God only? So you think about checking your ego. You edge God out, you push him aside, or you seek to exalt him only. Thinking about edging God out, there's many ways that we do this, that we push him aside. One way is that we simply put something or someone else in God's place as our object of affection or worship. This is breaking the first commandment, right? You shall have no other gods before me. That commandment, it translates into our lives today. Perhaps it's success that we worship. That becomes the object of our affection. We desire it more than anything else. Material possessions, we focus so much on those that that's our life is becomes all about those things. Or perhaps, worst of all, we put ourselves in that position that is actually for God. And so we decide that we are in control of our lives, that we dictate the way that we are going to live, how we're going to talk, the way that we are going to act, things like that. So we edge God out and we put something else in God's place, and it may be ourselves that we put in God's place. Could go like this too. We trust in something other than God for our security and our self-worth. So maybe it's that we put things like our security and our self-worth in our intellect, in our abilities. Perhaps it's a position that we have received or earned. Maybe it's our performance or possessions. And so we find our identity, who we are, we find it all in things that we have achieved. Now, we know that this is risky, right? What happens when we lose that position? Perhaps something happens where we don't have the kind of intellect we once had. And so this can be temporary. We understand to put God in that place is certain. He's sure. He's the creator. He's eternal. And so what happens when we lose our influence or lose anything other than God when it comes to finding our self-worth and our value, we might say? Perhaps we crumble, right? Perhaps that's what takes place. Another way we edge God out is when we attribute more value to the opinion of others than to how God views us. Think of Paul's words in Galatians chapter 1, verse 10. He writes, am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. I think this is one of those passages, kind of like the one we looked at this morning in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. I think this is one that kind of stops you in your tracks, right? This is a problem. It is for me. Am I trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? And Paul says, if I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. Whoa. So we edge God out when we attribute more value to the opinion of others than to how God views us. We ought to live our lives as if God is our audience in our everyday life. Maybe we can think of it as the world is the stage. And so how are we going to live? Are we going to live in a way that is going to please him, it's going to make him smile, is going to demonstrate our faith and our courage based on our relationship with him? people are fickle and trying to please everyone. If you've been here before, I think you're going to get what I'm saying. Trying to please everyone will simply lead to a whole lot of anxiety and inner turmoil. Doesn't work, right? We're going to hurt feelings at time, and leadership takes, and listen, leadership in the sense of living for God, it takes making tough decisions at times. It takes perhaps causing a little bit of consternation, but who is it that we're ultimately living for? Who's our true leader? Be another way of saying that. So there's two main problems with edging God out. Well, there's maybe more than that, but the way I see it, there's two main problems with edging God out. The first is simply pride. So pride makes life all about us, right? Romans 12:3, there Paul says, For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. Do not think more highly of yourselves than you ought. And then Jesus, he tells this parable. This is in Luke chapter 18, verses 9 through 14. Luke 18, 9 through 14. I love when you read this first sentence in this story here, the audience that Jesus is addressing. Okay, so Luke 18, beginning at verse 9. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. And then Jesus continues the story. But the tax collector stood at a distance, perhaps not even feeling worthy to stand among this group of people. He would not even look up to heaven. But he beat his breast and he said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And then Jesus clinches it this way. He says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. It's a tax collector, the one who says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner, who's justified. And then the Pharisee, who I believe, it, you know, in this parable, it's pretty clear. He represents those who look down on everybody else, was not justified before God. And so, the teeth of the story, humble yourselves before God. Don't be confident in your own righteousness. Your righteousness comes from God's grace and mercy alone. So pride and leadership, it plays out like this. I'm not going to acknowledge someone else's good idea. The good ideas that we have around here, they come from me. Surely no one else would come up with a good idea. We treat people as far too below us in position or credentials to seek out their input on issues that may affect them. No, I was put in this position because I know what I'm doing. I don't need anybody else's input. We act like the rules and judgments and standards we impose on others shouldn't apply to us because we're above the rules. We've achieved this position, right? We have all of this influence. We have the letters behind our name, right? The rules don't apply to us. Winning and losing become the main criteria we value, and character becomes simply an option. What's the bottom line anyways, right? Or we look in the mirror for a source of our success. Things have gone pretty good. Pat myself on the back, right? We look in the mirror for the source of success. We don't look at how others have played a role in what we've accomplished or what we've done. The book of Proverbs has a great deal to say about pride. Just a short sampling here, three verses, chapter 13, verse 10. pride only breeds quarrels. Or 16:18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Or the scariest, perhaps of all, maybe another passage will kind of stop us in our tracks. The Lord detests all the proud of heart. The Lord detests all the proud of heart. And so because of pride, we separate ourselves from God. We're too arrogant to pray. Why would I pray? I've got this all figured out. I don't need God's help. Perhaps we're too afraid of the answer to ask God the question. We're too full of our own agenda to wait for God to reveal His agenda for us. And so we separate ourselves from God. We also separate ourselves from others because of pride. We're too ashamed to ask for help or listen to the opinion of others, perhaps even very good input. Nah, don't need it. Also, what happens, I've found, with pride is after a while, people just don't want to be around you, right? Team players, those that add value to all of those that are on the team or in the family or in the church, whatever the case may be. So we separate ourselves from others. We also, because of pride, we participate in unhealthy comparisons. Instead of measuring ourselves and of how well we're obeying God and living for Him, we're constantly tempted to look around to see how we compare to others. Now, we can learn from others. There are models out there of Christ-like leadership, and we should learn. But when we continually make the standard of our lives other people, we've got the wrong measuring stick. How are we measuring up to what God desires for us? How am I doing according to His word and what He would hope for me as a leader? And so when we edge God out, there's this kind of toxic pride that will infiltrate our hearts. It's dangerous. It's dangerous for us. It's dangerous for others. But there's another problem to come when we edge God out, and it is fear. Fear plays out in these kind of scenarios. We're afraid to slow down. We're afraid to slow down in our work, taking a look at the condition of our lives. We keep a schedule that continually keeps us moving and working because we're afraid if we slow down, we may not like what we feel or what we learn about ourselves. We also try to control others. So we're afraid of failure. This may even come from a good place, but it becomes toxic. We're afraid of failure, so we choose exhaustion over training others and delegating tasks to others. And so we become that dirty word, right? Micromanagers, right? And oftentimes it comes from pride and from fear. Man, I don't know if that person's going to be able to get the job done. Not as well as me, anyways. And so this fear of losing power, of losing influence, and so we end up micromanaging. And then, similar to what I mentioned just a moment ago, we thirst for the approval of others. We're afraid others won't think we're capable of completing our task if we delegate. And maybe people will fear that the work that we're involved in is unsatisfactory. So we anxiously, I'm gonna use that word, anxiously try to perform in such a way that we gain the approval of others around us. The problem with this is then we're saying God's approval is not enough. We need the approval of others. And so when we edge God out, what can creep in, perhaps slowly, perhaps rapidly, is pride and fear. The other side of this, the good side, is exalting God only. That's what it ultimately is about when we think about being servant leaders. We worship Him alone. We depend on God for our security, our mission, and our identity. He is ultimately our audience. He's the judge, and so we're going to live for Him, like Paul said, servant of Christ. That's what this is about. And so whereas pride and fear are the result of edging God out, when we exalt God only, the result is humility, what we see in Jesus thinking about washing the disciples' feet, and confidence as well. Like we mentioned last week, it says about Jesus before he washed the disciples' feet that he knew where he came from and he knew where he was going. It's out of that place, a radical sense of self-awareness, identity, and mission, he was able to humble himself and wash the disciples' feet. He recognized ultimately that his audience was his Father. And so humility is knowing whose you are and who you are. I love what C.S. Lewis said about humility. He said, it's not thinking of yourself, not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. It's about giving credit to others. It's about recognizing that there's no task really that is too small to take care of. You're not above some sort of task or not above interacting with folks. That's not what we see in Jesus. We see him washing the disciples' feet. So we're willing to give credit to others. I mean, John 15:5, we looked at it last week. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Now, one of the powerful things about this verse here, this is an incredibly humbling verse, right? Anything that we do is because of God working in us. And so for all the things that we do, ultimately the credit goes to God, right? The glory, the praise, it's ultimately about God. And so humility emphasizes the importance of others. Of course, it emphasizes God's work in our lives. It uses the term we instead of me or I. There's no job that's too small to do. And when we exalt God only in leadership, we move toward relationships with others as we are more free to be transparent and open with people. We begin to become more content with who we are, and we feel less need to compare ourselves with others. And we are more confident about seeking the truth and no longer distorting it to fit our purposes. We can handle the truth. It's okay. We can handle input. We can handle working with others. I'd like for us to end with Matthew 26, 36 through 39. Again, we're thinking about leading like Jesus. I want us to see what Jesus prayed here. Matthew 26, 36 through 39. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little further, he fell with his face down to the ground, and he prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." So it's been pointed out so many times that we see the humanity of Jesus here. "My Father, if it is possible, take this cup from me." Is there another way that we can do this, right? That's the first part of the prayer here. "Please, no." And then he says, "Yet, not as I will, but as you will." He was living for the Father, living for his will, for his plan, for his purposes, even though he knew that the plan involved death. He would go through with it because he was striving to exalt God only. Remember what he said in Mark 10. "The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." That is servant leadership to a T. So Jesus humbly obeyed his Father for the sake of others. And that's our call to. Not easy, not easy all the time. I mean, Jesus said, may this cup be taken from me, but he said, yet not as I will, but as you will. And that ultimately should be our prayer continually, shouldn't it? Every day, every moment. Yet not as I will, but as you will. God, use me for your purposes. If there's anybody here tonight that needs the prayers of the church family, we're here for you. So we'd be glad to pray with you. Bob's going to lead us in an invitation song. You can let us know what's going on in your life, and we'd be glad to pray with you or for you. If there's anybody here this evening that's ready to give your life over to Jesus in baptism, we would love to witness you make that decision tonight. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship our God.